Side 4, The Divine Invasion, by Philip K. Dick. Continuing on page 122.
"We could get something hot to drink," Zena said. He murmured, "I just want to sit. I shall sit here until it is time to go to meet Herb Asher," he said to himself. "He can tell me about Ribis. His many memories of her will give me joy, the joy that, right now, I lack. I love him," he realized. "I love my mother's husband, my legal father. Like other men, he is a good human being. He is a man of merit and to be cherished. But unlike other men, Herb Asher knows who I am. Thus I can talk openly with him, as I do with Elias and with Zena. It will help," he thought. "I will be less weary, no longer as I am now, pinned by my cares, weighed down. The burden, to some extent, will lift, because it will be shared. And," he thought, "there is still so much that I do not remember. I am not as I was. Like them, like the people, I have fallen. The bright morning star which fell did not fall alone. It tore down everything else with it, including me. Part of my own being fell with it, and I am that fallen being now." But then, as he sat there on the bench with Zena, in the park, on this cold day so near the vernal equinox, he thought, "But Herbert Asher lay dreaming in his bunk, dreaming of a phantom life with Linda Fox, while my mother struggled to survive. Not once did he try to help her. Not once did he inquire into her trouble and seek remedy. Not until I myself, forced him to go to her, not until then did he do anything. I do not love the man," he said to himself. "I know the man, and he forfeited his right to my love. He lost my love because he did not care. I cannot, thereupon, care about him in response. Why should I help any of them?" he asked himself. "They do what is right only when forced to, when there is no alternative. They fell of their own accord, and are fallen now of their own accord, by what they have voluntarily done. My mother is dead because of them. They murdered her. They would murder me if they could figure out where I am. Only because I have confused their wits do they leave me alone. High and low they seek my life, just as Ahab sought Elijah's life so long ago. They are a worthless race, and I do not care if they fall. I do not care at all. To save them I must fight what they themselves are, and have always been."
"You look so downcast," Zena said.
"What is this for?" he said. "They are what they are. I grow more and more weary, and I care less and less as I begin to remember. For 10 years I have lived on this world now, and for 10 years they have hunted me. Let them die. Did I not say to them the Talion law, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth? Is that not in the Torah? They drove me off this world 2,000 years ago. I return. They wish me dead. Under the Talion law, I should wish them dead. It is the sacred law of Israel. It is my law, my word."
Zena was silent.
"Advise me," Emmanuel said. "I have always listened to your advice."
Zena said, "One day Elijah the prophet appeared to Rabbi Baruchar in the market of Lapet. Rabbi Baruchar asked him, 'Is there anyone among the people of this market who is destined to share in the world to come?' 2 men appeared on the scene, and Elijah said, 'These 2 will share in the world to come.' Rabbi Baruchar asked them, 'What is your occupation?' They said, 'We are merrymakers. When we see a man who is downcast, we cheer him up.
When we see two people quarreling with one another, we endeavor to make peace between them.
You make me less sad, Emmanuel said, and less weary, as you always have, as Scripture says of you. Then I was at his side every day, his darling and delight, playing in his presence continually, playing on the earth when he had finished it, while my delight was in mankind. And Scripture says, Wisdom I loved. I sought her out when I was young and longed to win her for my bride, and I fell in love with her beauty. But that was Solomon, not me. So I determined to bring her home to live with me, knowing that she would be my counselor in prosperity and my comfort in anxiety and grief. Solomon was a wise man to love you so.
Beside him, the girl smiled. She said nothing, but her dark eyes shone.
Why are you smiling? He asked. Because you have shown the truth of Scripture when it says, I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in love and in mercy. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall love the Lord. Remember that you made the covenant with man, and you made man in your own image. You cannot break the covenant. You have made man that promise, but you will never break it.
Emmanuel said, That is so. You advise me well.
He thought, And you cheer my heart. You above all else, you who came before creation, like the two merrymakers, he thought, who Elijah said would be saved. Your dancing, your singing, and the sound of bells. I know, he said, what your name means.
Zina, she said. It's just a name.
It is the Romanian word for... He ceased speaking. The girl had trembled visibly, and her eyes were now wide.
How long have you known it? She said,
Years. Listen. I know a bank where the wild thyme blows, where oxlips and the nodding violet grows, quite over-canopied with luscious woodbine, with sweet musk roses and with eglantine. There sleeps Titania some time of the night, lulled in these flowers with dances and delight. And there the snake throws her enameled skin, weed wide enough. I will finish. Listen. To wrap a fairy in. And I have known this, he finished, all this time. Staring at him, Zina said,
Yes, Zina means fairy.
You are not holy wisdom, he said. You are Diana, the fairy queen. Cold wind rustled the branches of the trees, and across the frozen creek a few dry leaves scuttled.
I see, Zina said.
About the two of them the wind rustled as if speaking. He could hear the wind as words, and the wind said, Beware. He wondered if she heard it too. But they were still friends. Zina told Emmanuel about an early identity that she had once had. Thousands of years ago, she said, she had been Ma'at, the Egyptian goddess who represented the cosmic order and justice. When someone died, his heart was weighed against Ma'at's ostrich feather. By this, the person's burden of sins was determined. The principle by which the sinfulness of the person was determined consisted of the degree of his truthfulness. To the extent that he was truthful, the judgment went in his favor. This judgment was presided over by Osiris, but since Ma'at was the goddess of truthfulness, then it followed that the determination was hers to make. After that, Zina said, the idea of the judgment of human souls passed over into Persia. In the ancient Persian religion, Zoroastrianism,
A sifting bridge had to be crossed by the newly dead person. If he was evil, the bridge got narrower and narrower until he toppled off and plunged into the fiery pit of hell. Judaism, in its later stages, and Christianity had gotten their ideas of the final days from this. The good person, who managed to cross the sifting bridge, was met by the spirit of his religion, a beautiful young woman with superb large breasts. However, if the person was evil, the spirit of his religion consisted of a dried-up old hag with sagging pats. You could tell at a glance, therefore, which category you belonged to. "Were you the spirit of religion for the good persons?" Emmanuel asked. Zena did not answer the question. She passed on to another matter which she was more anxious to communicate to him. In these judgments of the dead, stemming from Egypt and Persia, the scrutiny was pitiless, and the sinful soul was de facto doomed. Upon your death, the books listing your good deeds and bad deeds closed, and no one, even the gods, could alter the tabulation. In a sense, the procedure of judgment was mechanical. A bill of particulars, in essence, had been drawn up against you, compiled during your lifetime. And now this bill of particulars was fed into a mechanism of retribution. Once the mechanism received the list, it was all over for you. The mechanism ground you to shreds, and the gods merely watched impassively. But one day, Zena said, a new figure made its appearance at the path leading to the sifting bridge. This was an enigmatic figure who seemed to consist of a shifting succession of aspects or roles. Sometimes he was called Comforter, sometimes Advocate, sometimes Beside Helper, sometimes Support, sometimes Advisor. No one knew where he had come from. For thousands of years he had not been there, and then one day he had appeared. He stood at the edge of the busy path, and as the souls made their way to the sifting bridge, this complex figure, who sometimes but rarely seemed to be a woman, signaled to the persons, each in turn, to attract their attention. It was essential that the beside helper got their attention before they stepped onto the sifting bridge, because after that it was too late. "Too late for what?" Emmanuel said. Zena said, "The beside helper, upon stopping a person approaching the sifting bridge, asked him if he wished to be represented in the testing which was to come." "By the beside helper?" "The beside helper," she explained, "assumed his role of advocate. He offered to speak on the person's behalf. But the beside helper offered something more. He offered to present his own bill of particulars to the retribution mechanism, in place of the bill of particulars of the person. If the person were innocent, this would make no difference. But for the guilty, it would yield up a sentence of exculpation rather than guilt." "That's not fair," Emmanuel said. "The guilty should be punished." "Why?" Zena said. "Because it is the law," Emmanuel said. "Then there is no hope for the guilty." Emmanuel said, "They deserve no hope." "What if everyone is guilty?" He had not thought of that. "What does the beside helper's bill of particulars list?" he asked. "It is blank," Zena said, "a perfectly white piece of paper, a document on which nothing is inscribed." "The retributive machinery could not process that." Zena said, "It would process it. It would imagine that it had received a compilation of a totally spotless person." "But it couldn't act. It would have no input data." "That's the whole point." "Then the machinery of justice has been bilked." "Bilked out of a victim," Zena said. "Is that not to be desired? Should there be victims? What is gained if there is an unending procession of victims? Does that right the wrongs they have committed?" "No," he said. "The idea," Zena said, "is to feed mercy into the circuit.
The beside helper is an amicus curiae, a friend of the court. He advises the court, by its permission, that the case before it constitutes an exception. The general rule of punishment does not apply. And he does this for everyone, every guilty person, for every guilty person who accepts his offer of advocacy and help. But then you'd have an endless procession of exceptions, because no guilty person in his right mind would reject such an offer. Every single guilty person would wish to be judged as an exception, as a case involving mitigating circumstances. Zena said, "But the person would have to accept the fact that he was, on his own, guilty. He could, of course, wager that he was innocent, in which case he would not need the advocacy of the beside helper." After a moment of pondering, Emmanuel said, "That would be a foolish choice. He might be wrong, and he loses nothing by accepting the assistance of the beside helper." "In practice, however," Zena said, "most souls about to be judged reject the offer of advocacy by the beside helper." "On what basis?" He could not fathom their reasoning. Zena said, "On the basis that they are sure they are innocent. To receive this help, the person must go with the pessimistic assumption that he is guilty, even though his own assessment of himself is one of innocence. The truly innocent need no beside helper, just as the physically healthy need no physician. In a situation of this kind, the optimistic assumption is perilous. It's the bailout theorem that little creatures employ when they construct a burrow. If they are wise, they build a second exit to their burrow, operating on the pessimistic assumption that the first one will be found by a predator. All creatures who did not use their theorem are no longer with us." Emmanuel said, "It is degrading to a man that he must consider himself sinful. It is degrading to a gopher to have to admit that his burrow may not be perfectly built, that a predator may find it. You are talking about an adversary situation. Is divine justice an adversary situation? Is there a prosecutor?" "Yes, there is a prosecutor of man in the divine court. It is Satan. There is the advocate who defends the accused human, and Satan who impugns and indicts him. The advocate, standing beside the man, defends him and speaks for him. Satan, confronting the man, accuses him. Would you wish man to have an accuser and not a defender? Would that seem just?" "But innocence must be presumed." The girl's eyes gleamed. "Precisely the point made by the advocate in each trial that takes place. Hence, he substitutes his own blameless record for that of his client and justifies the man by surrogation." "Are you this beside helper?" Emmanuel asked. "No," she said. "He is a far more puzzling figure than I. If you are having difficulty with me in determining..." "I am," Emmanuel said. "He is a latecomer into this world," Zena said, "not found in earlier eons. He represents an evolution in the divine strategy, one by which the primordial damage is repaired. One of many, but a main one." "Will I ever encounter him?" "You will not be judged," Zena said. "So perhaps not. But all humans will see him standing by the busy road, offering his help, offering it in time, before the person starts across the sifting bridge and is judged. The beside helper's intervention always comes in time. It is part of his nature to be there soon enough." Emmanuel said, "I would like to meet him." "Follow the travel pattern of any human," Zena said, "and you will arrive at the point where that human encounters him. That is how I know about him. I, too, am not judged." She pointed to the slate that she had given him. "Ask it for more information about the beside helper." The slate read, "To call." "Is that all you can tell me?" Emmanuel asked it. A new word formed, a Greek word, parakalein.
He wondered about this, wondered greatly at this new entity who had come into the world, who could be called on by those in need, those who stood in danger of negative judgment. It was one more of the mysteries presented to him by Zena. There had been so many now. He enjoyed them, but he was puzzled. To call to aid. Parakalane. Strange, he thought. The world evolves even as it falls more and more. There are two distinct movements, the falling, and then, at the same time, the upward-rising work of repair. Antithetical movements, in the form of a dialectic of all creation and the powers contending behind it. Suppose Zena beckoned to the parts that fell, beckoned them, seductively, to fall farther. About this he could not yet tell. 11. Reaching out, Herb Asher took the boy in his arms. He hugged him tight. "And this is Zena," Elias Tate said, "Emmanuel's friend." He took the girl by the hand and led her to Herb Asher. "She's a little older than Manny." "Hello," Herb Asher said, but he did not care about her. He wanted to look at Ribis's son. 10 years, he thought. "This child has grown while I dreamed and dreamed, thinking I was alive when in fact I was not." Elias said, "She helps him. She teaches him. More than the school does. More than I do." Looking toward the girl, Herb Asher saw a beautiful, pale, heart-shaped face with eyes that danced with light. "What a pretty child," he thought, and turned back to Ribis's son. But then, struck by something, he looked once more at the girl. Mischief showed on her face, especially in her eyes. "Yes," he thought, "there is something in her eyes, a kind of knowledge." "They've been together 4 years now," Elias said. She gave him a high-technology slate. "It's some kind of advanced computer terminal. It asks him questions, poses questions to him, and gives him hints. Right, Manny?" Emmanuel said, "Hello, Herb Asher." He seemed solemn and subdued, in contrast to the girl. "Hello," he said to Emmanuel. "How much you look like your mother." "In that crucible we grow," Emmanuel said cryptically. He did not amplify. Herb did not know what to say. "Is everything all right?" "Yes," the boy nodded. "You have a heavy burden on you," Herb said. "The slate plays tricks," Emmanuel said. There was silence. "What's wrong?" Herb said to Elias. To the boy, Elias said, "Something is wrong, isn't it?" "While my mother died," Emmanuel said, gazing fixedly at Herb Asher, "you listened to an illusion. She does not exist, that image. Your fox is a phantasm, nothing else." "That was a long time ago," Herb said. "The phantasm is with us in the world," Emmanuel said. "That's not my problem," Herb said. Emmanuel said, "But it is mine. I mean to solve it. Not now, but at the proper time." "You fell asleep, Herb Asher, because a voice told you to fall asleep. This world here, this planet, all of it, all its people, everything here sleeps. I have watched it for 10 years, and there is nothing good I can say about it. What you did, it does. What you were, it is. Maybe you still sleep. Do you sleep, Herb Asher? You dreamed about my mother while you lay in cryonic suspension. I tapped your dreams. From them, I learned a lot about her. I am as much her as I am myself. As I told her, she lives on in me, and as me. I have made her deathless.
Your wife is here, not back in that littered dome. Do you realize that? Look at me, and you see Ribbeth, whom you ignored.
Herb Asher said,
There is nothing for you to tell me, Emmanuel said. I read your heart, not your words. I knew you then, and I know you now. Herbert, Herbert, I called to you. I summoned you back to life, for your sake and for hers, and because it was for her sake, it was for my sake. When you helped her, you helped me, and when you ignored her, you ignored me. Thus says your God.
Reaching out, Elias put his arm around Herb Asher to reassure him.
I will always speak the truth to you, Herb Asher, the boy continued. There is no deceit in God. I want you to live. I made you live once before, when you lay in psychological death. God does not desire any living thing's death. God takes no delight in non-existence. Do you know what God is, Herb Asher? God is he who causes to be. Put another way, if you seek the basis of being that underlies everything, you will surely find God. You can work back to God from the phenomenal universe, or you can move from the Creator to the phenomenal universe. Each implies the other. The Creator would not be the Creator if there were no universe, and the universe would cease to be if the Creator did not sustain it. The Creator does not exist prior to the universe in time. He does not exist in time at all. God creates the universe constantly. He is with it, not above or behind it. This is impossible to understand for you, because you are a created thing and exist in time. But eventually you will return to your Creator, and then you will again no longer exist in time. You are the breath of your Creator, and as He breathes in and out, you live. Remember that, for that sums up everything that you need to know about your God. There is first an exhalation from God on the part of all creation, and then, at a certain point, it starts its journey back, its inhalation. This cycle never ceases. You leave me. You are away from me. You start back. You rejoin me. You and everything else. It is a process, an event. It is an activity. My activity. It is the rhythm of my own being, and it sustains you all. Amazing, Herb Asher thought. A 10-year-old boy. Her son speaking this. Emmanuel, the girl Zena said, you are ponderous. Smiling at her, the boy said, games, then. Would that be better? There are events ahead that I must shape. I must arouse fire that burns, that sears. Scripture says, for he is like a refiner's fire. And Scripture also says, and who can abide the day of his coming? I say, however, that it will be more than this. I say, the day comes, glowing like a furnace. All the arrogant and the evildoers shall be chaff, and that day when it comes shall set them ablaze. It shall leave them neither root nor branch. What do you say to that, Herb Asher? Emmanuel gazed at him intently, awaiting his response. Zena said, but for you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in his wings. That is true, Emmanuel said. In a low voice, Elias said, and you shall break loose like calves released from the stall. Yes, Emmanuel said. He nodded. Herb Asher, returning the boy's gaze, said, I am afraid. I really am. He was glad of the arm around him, the reassuring arm of Elias. In a reasonable tone of voice, a mild tone, Zena said, He won't do all those terrible things. That's to scare people.
Zena, Elias said.
Laughing, she said, It's true. Ask him.
You will not put the Lord your God to the test, Emmanuel said.
I'm not afraid, Zena said quietly.
Emmanuel, to her, said, I will break you like a rod of iron. I shall dash you in pieces like a potter's vessel.
No, Zena said.
To Herb Asher, she said, There is nothing to fear. It's a manner of talking, no more. Come to me if you get scared, and I will converse with you.
That is true, Emmanuel said.
If you are seized and taken down into the prison, she will go with you. She will never leave you.
An unhappy expression crossed his face. Suddenly, he was again a 10-year-old boy.
But...
What is it? Elias said.
I will not say now, Emmanuel said, speaking with difficulty.
Herb Asher, to his disbelief, saw tears in the boy's eyes.
Perhaps I will never say it. She knows what I mean.
Yes, Zena said, and she smiled.
Mischief lay in her smile, or so it seemed to Herb Asher. It puzzled him. He did not understand the invisible transaction taking place between Ribbus's son and the girl. It troubled him, and his fear became greater, his sense of deep unease. The four of them had dinner together that night.
Where do you live? Herb Asher asked the girl.
Do you have a family? Parents?
Technically, I'm a ward of the government school we go to, Zena said. But for all intents and purposes, I'm in Elias's custody now. He's in the process of becoming my guardian.
Elias, eating, paying attention to his plate of food, said, We are a family, the three of us. And now you also, Herb.
I may go back to my dome, Herb said, in the CY30-CY30B system.
Staring at him, Elias halted in his eating, fork full of food raised. Why?
I'm uncomfortable here, Herb said.
He had not worked it out. His feelings remained vague, but they were intense feelings.
It's oppressive here. There's more of a sense of freedom out there.
Freedom to lie in your bunk listening to Linda Fox, Elias said.
No,
he shook his head.
Zena said, Emmanuel, you scare him with your talk about afflicting the earth with fire. He remembers the plagues in the Bible, what happened with Egypt.
I want to go home, Herb said simply. Emmanuel said,
You miss Ribbus.
Yes, that was true.
She isn't there, Emmanuel reminded him.
He ate slowly, somberly, bite after bite. As if Herb thought eating was for him a solemn ritual, a matter of consuming something sanctified.
Can't you bring her back? He said to Emmanuel.
The boy did not respond. He continued to eat.
No answer, Herb said with bitterness. I am not here for that, Emmanuel said. She understood. It is not important that you understand, but it was important that she know, and I caused her to know. You remember, you were there on that day, the day I told her what lay ahead.
Okay, Herb said.
She lives elsewhere now, Emmanuel said. You...
Okay, he repeated with anger, enormous anger. To him, Emmanuel said, speaking slowly and quietly, his face calm.
You do not grasp the situation, Herbert. It is not a good universe that I strive for, nor a just one, nor a pretty one. The existence of the universe itself is at stake. Final victory for Belial does not mean imprisonment for the human race, continued slavery, but non-existence. Without me, there is nothing, not even Belial, whom I created.
Eat your dinner,
Zena said in a gentle voice. "The power of evil," Emmanuel continued, "is the ceasing of reality, the ceasing of existence itself. It is the slow slipping away of everything that is, until it becomes, like Linda Fox, a phantasm. That process has begun. It began with the primal fall. Part of the cosmos fell away. The Godhead itself suffered a crisis. Can you fathom that, Herb Asher? A crisis in the ground of being? What does that convey to you? The possibility of the Godhead ceasing? Does it convey that to you? Because the Godhead is all that stands between..." He broke off. "You can't even imagine it. No creature can imagine non-being, especially its own non-being. I must guarantee being, all being, including yours." Herb Asher said nothing. "A war is coming," Emmanuel said. "We will choose our ground. It will be for us, the two of us, Belial and me, a table on which we play, over which we wager the universe, the being of being as such. I initiate this final part of the ages of war. I have advanced into Belial's territory, his home. I have moved forward to meet him, not the other way around. Time will tell if it was a wise idea." "Can't you foresee the results?" Herb said. Emmanuel regarded him silently. "You can," Herb said. "You know what the outcome will be," he realized. "You know now. You knew when you entered Ribis's womb. You knew from the beginning of creation, before creation, in fact, before a universe existed." "They will play by rules," Zena said. "Rules agreed on." "Then," Herb said, "that's why Belial has not attacked you. That's why you've been able to live here and grow up for 10 years. He knows you're here."
"Does he know?" Emmanuel said.
Silence.
"I haven't told him," Emmanuel said. "It is not my burden. He must find out for himself. I do not mean the government. I mean the power that truly rules, in comparison to which the government, all governments, are shadows." "He'll tell him when he's ready," Zena said. "Good and ready."
Herb said, "Are you good and ready, Emmanuel?" The boy smiled, a child's smile, a shift away from the stern countenance of a moment before. He said nothing. "A game," Herb Asher realized. "A child's game." Seeing this, he trembled. Zena said, "Time is a child at play, playing draughts. A child is the kingdom."
"What is that?" Elias said.
"It is not from Judaism," Zena said obscurely. She did not amplify.
The part of him that derives from his mother, Herb Asher realized, is 10 years old, and the part of him that is Yah has no age. It is infinity itself, a compound of the very young and the timeless, precisely what Zena in her arcane quote had stated. Perhaps this was not unique, this mixture. Someone had noted it before, noted it and declared it in words.
"You venture into Belial's realm," Zena said to Emmanuel as she ate. "But would you have the courage to venture into my realm?"
"What realm is that?" Emmanuel said. Elias Tate stared at the girl, and, equally puzzled, Herb Asher regarded her. But Emmanuel seemed to understand her. He showed no surprise. Despite his question, Herb Asher thought, he knows. Knows already. Zena said, "Where I am not as you see me now." An interval of silence passed as Emmanuel pondered. He did not answer. He sat as if withdrawn, as if his mind had moved far away, skimming countless worlds, Herb Asher thought. How strange this is. What are they talking about? Emmanuel said slowly and carefully, I have a dreadful land to deal with, Zena. I have no time. I think you are apprehensive, Zena said. She turned to her slice of apple pie and mound of ice cream. No, Emmanuel said. Come then, she said. And all at once the color and fire, the mischief and delight, showed in her dark eyes. I challenge you, she said. Here. She reached out her hand to the boy. My psychopomp, Emmanuel said somberly. Yes, I'll be your guide. You would lead the Lord your God? I would like to show you where the bells come from, the land out of which their sounds come. What do you say? He said, I will go. What are you two talking about? Elias said with apprehension. Manny, what is this? What does she mean? She's not taking you anywhere that I don't know about. Emmanuel glanced at him. You have much to do, Elias said. There is no realm, Emmanuel said, where I am not. If it is a genuine place and not fancy. Is your realm fancy, Zena? No, she said. It is real. Where is it? Elias said. Zena said, It is here. Here? Elias said. What do you mean? I see what's here. Here is here. She is right, Emmanuel said. The soul of God, he said to Zena, follows you. And trusts me? This is a game, Emmanuel said. Everything is a game for you. I will play the game. I can do that. I will play and come back to this realm. Zena said, Do you find this realm so valuable to you? It is a dreadful place, Emmanuel said, but it is here that I must act on that great and terrible day. Postpone that day, Zena said. I will postpone it. I will show you the bells that you hear, and as a result, that day will... She broke off. It will still come, Emmanuel said. It is foreordained. Then we shall play now, Zena said cryptically. Both Herb and Elias remained puzzled. Herb Asher thought, Each of them knows what the other means, but I don't. Where is she taking him, if it is here? We are here now. Emmanuel said, The secret commonwealth. Damn it, no! Elias exclaimed and hurled his cup across the room. It shattered against the far wall in many little pieces. Manny, I have heard of that place. What is it? Herb Asher said, astonished at the old man's fury. Zena said calmly, That's the correct term. Of a middle nature betwixt man and angel, she quoted. You are being piped away, Elias said furiously. Leaning forward, he seized hold of the boy with his great hands. That is so, Emmanuel said. You know where she is taking you, Elias said. You do know. You have no fear, Manny. That is a mistake. You should be afraid. To Zena, he said, Get out of here. I did not know what you are. With violence and dismay, he regarded her, his lips working. I did not know you. I didn't understand. He did, Zena said. Emmanuel knew. The slate told him. Let us finish our meal, Emmanuel said. And then, Zena, I will go with you. He resumed eating in his methodical way, his face impassive. I have a surprise for you, Zena, he said. What? She said. What is it? Something that you do not know. Emmanuel paused in his eating. This was foreordained from the start. I saw it before the universe was, my journey into your land.
Then you know how it will end, Zena said.
For the first time, she seemed hesitant. She faltered.
I forget sometimes that you know everything.
Not everything. Because of my brain damage, the accident. It has become a random variable, introducing chance.
God plays at dice,
Zena said. She raised an eyebrow.
If necessary, Emmanuel said. If there is no other way.
You planned this, Zena said.
Or did you? I can't make it out. You are impaired. You may not have known. You are using a tactic on me, Emmanuel.
She laughed.
Very good. I can't be sure. Extremely good. I congratulate you.
Emmanuel said, You must go through with it, not knowing if I planned it out or not. So I have the advantage.
She shrugged. But it seemed to Herb Asher that she had not regained her poise.
Emmanuel had shaken her. He thought, And that is good.
Don't abandon me, Lord, Elias said in a trembling voice. Take me with you.
Okay, the boy nodded. What am I supposed to do? Herb Asher said.
Come, Zena said.
The secret commonwealth, Elias said. I never believed it existed. He glowered at the girl, baffled.
It doesn't exist. That's the whole point.
It exists, she said, and here.
Come with us, Mr. Asher. You are welcome. But there I am not as I am now. None of us is, except you, Emmanuel.
To the boy, Elias said, Lord,
there is a doorway, Emmanuel said, to her land. It can be found anywhere that the golden proportion exists. Is that not true, Zena?
True, she said. Based on the Fibonacci constant, Emmanuel said. A ratio, he explained to Herb Asher. 1:0.618034. The ancient Greeks knew it as the golden section and as the golden rectangle. Their architecture utilized it. For instance, the Parthenon. For them, it was a geometric model, but Fibonacci of Pisa, in the Middle Ages, developed it in terms of pure number.
In this room alone, Zena said, I count several doors.
The ratio, she said to Herb Asher, is that used in playing cards, 3:5. It is found in snail shells and extragalactic nebulae, from the pattern formation of the hair on your head to...
It pervades the universe, Emmanuel said, from the microcosms to the macrocosm.
It has been called one of the names of God. In a small spare room of Elias's house, Herb Asher prepared to bed down for the night. Standing at the doorway in a heavy, somewhat rumpled robe, with great slippers on his feet, Elias said, May I talk with you? Herb nodded. She is taking him away, Elias said. He came into the room and seated himself. You realize that? It did not come from the direction we expected. I expected, he corrected himself. His face dark, he sat clasping and unclasping his hands. The enemy has taken a strange form. Chilled, Herb said, Belial? I don't know, Herb. I've known the girl 4 years. I think a great deal of her. In some ways, I love her, even as much as I do Manny. She's been a good friend to him. Apparently he knew. Maybe not right off. But somewhere along the line, he figured it out. I checked. I used my computer terminal to research the word Zena. It's Romanian for fairy. Another world has found out Emmanuel. She approached him the first day at school. I see why now. She was waiting. Expecting him. You see? Hence the mischief I see in her, Herb Asher said. He felt weary. It had been a long day. Elias said, "She will lead and lead, and he will follow. Follow knowingly, I think. He does foresee. It's what's called a priori knowledge about the universe. Once he foresaw everything. Not anymore. It's strange when you think about it, that he could foresee his own inability to foresee, his forgetfulness. I'll have to trust in him, Herb. There is no way." He gestured. "You understand. No one can tell him what to do. Herb, I don't want to lose him. How can he be lost?" There was a rupturing of the Godhead, a primordial schism. That's the basis of it all, the trouble, these conditions here, Belial and the rest of it. A crisis that caused part of the Godhead to fall. The Godhead split, and some remained transcendent, and some became abased. Fell with creation, fell along with the world. The Godhead has lost touch with a part of itself. And it could fragment further? Yes, Elias said. There could be another crisis. This may be that crisis. I don't know. I don't even know if he knows. The human part of him, the part derived from Ribbis, knows fear. But the other half, that half knows no fear, for obvious reasons. Maybe that's not good. That night, as he slept, Herb Asher dreamed that a woman was singing to him. She seemed to be Linda Fox, and yet she was not. He could see her, and he saw a terrible beauty, a wildness and light, and a sweet glowing face with eyes that shone at him lovingly. He and the woman were in a car, and the woman drove. He simply watched her, marveling at her beauty. She sang, "You have to put your slippers on to walk toward the dawn." But he did not have to walk, because the lovely woman was taking him there. She wore a white gown, and in her tumbled hair he saw a crown. She was a very young woman, but a woman nonetheless, not, like Zena, a child. When he awoke the next morning, the beauty of the woman and her singing haunted him. He could not forget it. He thought, "She is more attractive than the fox. I wouldn't have believed it. I would prefer her. Who is she?" "Good morning," Zena said, on her way to the bathroom to brush her teeth. He noticed that she wore slippers. But so, too, did Elias when he appeared. "What does it mean?" Herb asked himself. He did not know the answer. 12. "You dance and sing all night," Emmanuel said. He thought, "And it is beautiful." "Show me," he said. "Then we shall begin," Zena said. He sat under palm trees and knew that he had entered the garden. But it was the garden he himself had fashioned at the beginning of creation. She had not brought him to her realm. This was his own realm, restored. Buildings and vehicles, but the people did not hurry. They sat here and there enjoying the sun. One young woman had unbuttoned her blouse, and her breasts shone with perspiration. The sun radiated down, hot and bright. "No," he said, "this is not the Commonwealth." "I took you the wrong way," Zena said. "But it doesn't matter. There is nothing wrong with this place, is there? Does it lack? You know it doesn't lack. It is paradise." "I made it so," he said. "All right," Zena said. "This is the paradise that you created, and I will show you something better. Come." She reached out and took him by the hand. "That savings and loan building has the golden rectangle doorway. We can enter there. It is as good as any." Holding him by the hand, she led him to the corner, waited for the light to change, and then together they made their way down the sidewalk, past the resting people, to the savings and loan office. Pausing on the steps, Emmanuel said,
This is the doorway, she said, and led him up the steps. Your realm ends here, and mine begins. From now on, the laws are mine.
Her grip on his hand tightened.
So be it, he said, and continued on.
The robot teller said, Do you have your passbook, Miss Pallas?
In my purse.
Beside Emmanuel, the young woman opened her mail pouch leather purse, fumbled among keys, cosmetics, letters, assorted valuables, until her quick fingers found the passbook.
I want to draw out... Well, how much do I have?
Your balance appears in your passbook, the robot teller said in its dispassionate voice.
Yes, she agreed.
Opening the passbook, she scrutinized the figures, then took a withdrawal slip and filled it out. You are closing your account, the robot teller said, as she presented it with the passbook and slip.
That's right.
Has our service not been...
It's none of your damn business why I'm closing my account, she said.
Resting her sharp elbows on the counter, she rocked back and forth. Emmanuel saw that she wore high heels. Now she had become older. She wore a cotton print top and jeans, and her hair pulled back with a comb. Also, he saw, she wore sunglasses. She smiled at him. He said to himself, she has already changed. Presently, they stood on the roof parking lot of the Savings and Loan Building. Zena fumbled in her purse for her flycar keys.
It's a nice day, she said. Get in. I'll unlock the door for you.
She slipped in behind the wheel of the flycar and reached for the far door's handle.
This is a nice car, he said, and he thought, she reveals her domain by degrees. As she took me to my own garden world first, she now takes me stage by stage through the levels, the ascending levels of her own realm. She will strip the accretions away one by one as we penetrate deeper. This, now, is the surface only. This, he thought, is enchantment. Beware. You like my car? It gets me to work, he said, breaking in harshly. You lie, Zena.
What do you mean? The fly car rose up into the warm midday sky, joining the normal traffic. But her smile gave her away.
It's a beginning, she said. I don't want to startle you. Here, he said, in this world, you are not a child. That was a form you took, a pose. This is my real shape, honest. Zena, you have no real shape. I know you. For you, any shape is possible. Whichever shape appeals to you at the moment, you go from moment to moment, like a soap bubble.
Turning toward him, but still watching where she drove, Zena said,
You are in my world now, Yah. Take care. I can burst your world. It will simply return. It is everywhere, always. We have not gone away from where we were. Back there a few miles is the school that you and I attend. Back there in the house, Elias and Herb Asher are discussing what to do. Spatially, this is not another place, and you know that.
But, he said, you make the laws here.
Belial is not here, she said.
That surprised him. He had not foreseen that. And realizing that he had not foreseen it, he knew that he had not truly foreseen the total situation. To miss a single part was to miss it all.
He never penetrated my realm, Zena said as she negotiated her way through the sky traffic over Washington, D.C. He does not even know about it.
Let's go over to the tidal basin and look at the Japanese cherry trees. They're in bloom.
Are they? He said.
It seemed to him too early in the year.
They are blooming now, Zena said,
and steered her fly car toward the downtown center of the city.
In your world, he said.
He understood.
This is the spring, he said.
He could see the leaves and blossoms on the trees below them, the expanses of bright green.
Roll your window down, she said. It's not cold.
He said, the warmth in the palm tree garden.
Blasting, withering, dry heat, she said, scorching the world and turning it into a desert. You were always partial to arid land. Listen to me, Yahweh. I will show you things you know nothing about. You have gone from the wastelands to a frozen landscape, methane crystals, with little domes here and there, and stupid natives. You know nothing. Her eyes blazed. You skulk in the Badlands and promise your people a refuge they never found. All your promises have failed, which is good, because what you have promised them most is that you will curse them and afflict them and destroy them. Now shut up. My time and my realm have come. This is my world, and it is springtime, and the air does not wither the plants, nor do you. You will hurt no one here in my realm. Do you understand?
He said, Who are you? Laughing, she said, My name is Zina, Fairy.
I think, confused, he said, You, Yahweh, the woman said, You do not know who I am, and you do not know where you are. Is this the secret commonwealth, or have you been tricked?
You have tricked me, he said.
I am your guide, she said. As the Sefer Yezira says, Comprehend this great wisdom. Understand this knowledge. Inquire into it and ponder it. Render it evident and lead the Creator back to his throne again. And that, she finished, is what I will do. But it is by a route that you will not believe. It is a route that you do not know. You will have to trust me. You will trust your guide as Dante trusted his guide, through the realms, up and up.
He said, You are the adversary.
Yes, Zina said, I am.
But, he thought, that is not all. It is not that simple.
You are complex, he realized, you who drive this car. Paradox and contradictions. And most of all, your love of games, your desire to play.
I must think of it that way, he realized. As play.
I'll play, he agreed. I am willing.
Good. She nodded. Could you get my cigarettes for me out of my purse? The traffic's getting heavy. I'm going to have trouble finding a parking spot.
He rummaged in her purse, futilely.
Can't you find them? Keep looking. They're there.
You keep so many things in your purse.
He found the pack of Salems and held it toward her.
God doesn't light a woman's cigarette?
She took the cigarette and pressed in the dashboard lighter.
What does a 10-year-old boy know about that? He said.
Strange, she said. I'm old enough to be your mother, and yet you are older than I am. There is a paradox. You knew you would find paradoxes here. My realm abounds with them, as you were just thinking.
Do you want to go back, Yahweh, to the palm tree garden?
It is irreal, and you know it. Until you inflict decisive defeat on your adversary, it will remain irreal. That world is gone, and is now a memory.
You are the adversary, he said, puzzled. But you are not Belial.
Belial is in a cage at the Washington, D.C. Zoo, Zina said, in my realm. As an example of extraterrestrial life, a deplorable example. A thing from Sirius. From the fourth planet in the Sirius system, people stand around gaping at him in wonder.
He laughed.
You think I'm joking? I'll take you to the zoo. I'll show you.
I think you're serious.
Again he laughed. It delighted him.
The evil one, in a cage at the zoo.
What, with his own temperature and gravity and atmosphere, and imported food? An exotic life form?
He's angry as hell about it. Zina said.
I'm sure he is.
What do you have planned for me, Zina?
She said soberly, The truth, Yahweh. I will show you the truth before you leave here. I would not cage the Lord our God. You are free to roam my land. You are free here, Yahweh, entirely. I give you my word.
Vapors, he said, the bond of a Zina.
After some difficulty, she found a slot in which to park her fly car.
Okay, she said. Let's stroll around looking at the cherry blossoms.
Yahweh, their color is mine, their pink. That is my hallmark. When that pink light is seen, I am near.
I know that pink, he said. It is the human phosphine response to full-spectrum white, to pure sunlight.
As she locked up the fly car, she said, See the people.
He looked about him and saw no one. The trees, heavy with blossoms, lined the tidal basin in a great semicircle. But despite the parked cars, no persons walked anywhere.
Then this is a fraud, he said.
Zena said, You are here, Yahweh, so that I can postpone your great and terrible day. I do not want to see the world scourged. I want you to see what you do not see. Only the two of us are here. We are alone. Gradually I will unfold my realm to you, and when I am done, you will withdraw your curse on the world. I have watched you for years now. I have seen your dislike of the human race and your sense of its worthlessness. I say to you, it is not worthless. It is not worthy to die, as you phrase it in your pompous fashion. The world is beautiful, and I am beautiful, and the cherry blossoms are beautiful. The robot teller at the savings and loan, even it is beautiful. The power of Belial is mere occlusion, hiding the real world. And if you attack the real world, as you have come to Earth to do, then you will destroy beauty and kindness and charm. Remember the crushed dog dying in the ditch at the side of the road? Remember what you felt about him. Remember what you knew him to be. Remember the inscription that Elias composed for that dog and that dog's death. Remember the dignity of that dog, and at the same time remember that the dog was innocent. His death was mandated by cruel necessity, a wrong and cruel necessity. The dog...
I know, he said.
You know what? That the dog was wrongly treated? That he was born to suffer unjust pain? It is not Belial that slew the dog. It is you, Yahweh, the Lord of hosts. Belial did not bring death into the world, because there has always been death. Death goes back a billion years on this planet, and what became of that dog, that is the fate of every creature you have made. You cried over that dog, did you not? I think at that point you understood, but now you have forgotten. If I were to remind you of anything, I would remind you of that dog and of how you felt. I would want you to remember how that dog showed you the way. It is the way of compassion, the most noble way of all. And I do not think you genuinely have that compassion. I really don't. You are here to destroy Belial, your adversary, not to emancipate mankind. You are here to wage war. Is that a fit thing for you to do? I wonder. Where is the peace that you promised man? You have come with a sword, and millions will die. It will be the dying dog multiplied millions of times. You cried for the dog. You cried for your mother, and even Belial. But I say, if you want to wipe away all the tears, as it says in Scripture, go away and leave this world, because the evil of this world, what you call Belial, and your adversary, is a form of illusion. These are not bad people. This is not a bad world. Do not make war on it, but bring it flowers.
Reaching, she broke off a sprig of cherry blossoms. She extended it to him, and reflexively he accepted it.
You are very persuasive, he said.
It is my job, she said. I say these things because I know these things. There is no deceit in you, and there is no deceit in me. But just as you curse, I play. Which of us has found the way?
For 2,000 years you have bided your time until you could slip back into Belial's fortress to overthrow him. I suggest that you find something else to do. Walk with me, and we will see flowers. It is better, and the world will prosper as it always has.
This is the springtime. It is now that flowers grow. And with me there is dancing also, and the sound of bells. You heard the bells, and you know that their beauty is greater than the power of evil. In some ways their beauty is greater than your own power, Yahweh, Lord of hosts. Do you not agree? Magic, he said. A spell. Beauty is a spell, she said, and war is reality. Do you want the sobriety of war, or the intoxication of what you see now, here in my world? We are alone now, but later on people will appear. I will repopulate my realm, but I want this moment to speak to you plainly. Do you know who I am? You do not know who I am, but finally I will lead you step by step back to your throne, you, the Creator, and then you will know who I am. You have guessed, but you have not guessed right. There are many guesses left for you, you who know everything. I am not Holy Wisdom, and I am not Diana. I am not Azina. I am not Pallas Athena. I am something else. I am the Spring Queen, and yet I am not that either. These are, as you put it, vapors. What I am, what I truly am, you will have to ferret out on your own. Now, let's walk. They walked along the path, by the water and the trees. We are friends, you and I, Emmanuel said. I tend to listen to you. Then postpone your great and terrible day. There is nothing good in death by fire. It is the worst death of all. You are the solar heat that destroys the crops. For 4 years we have been together, you and I. I have watched as your memory returned, and I have regretted its return. You afflicted that miserable woman who was your mother. You sickened your own mother, whom you say you love, whom you cried over. Instead of making war against evil, cure the dying dog in the ditch, and wipe away thereby your own tears. I hated to see you cry. You cried because you regained your own nature and comprehended that nature. You cried because you realized what you are. He said nothing. The air smells good, Zena said. Yes, he said. I will bring the people back, she said, one by one, until they are all around us. Look at them. And when you see one whom you would slay, tell me, and I will banish that person once more. But you must look at the person whom you would slay. You must see in that person the crushed and dying dog. Only then do you have the right to slay that person. Only when you cry are you entitled to destroy. You understand? Enough, he said. Why didn't you cry over the dog before the car crushed him? Why did you wait until it was too late? The dog accepted his situation, but I do not. I advise you. I am your guide. I say, it is wrong what you do. Listen to me. Stop it. He said, I have come to lift their oppression. You are impaired. I know that. I know what happened in the Godhead, the original crisis. It is no secret to me. In this condition, you seek to lift their oppression through a great and terrible day. Is that reasonable? Is that how you free the prisoners? I must break the power of... Where is that power? The government? Bukowski and Harms? They are idiots. They are a joke. Would you kill them? The Talion law that you laid down. I say, you have learnt how it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I say this to you, offer the wicked man no resistance. You must live by your own words. You must offer your adversary Belial no resistance. In my realm his power is not here. He is not here. What is here is a sport in a cage at a public zoo. We feed it and give it water and atmosphere and the right temperature. We try to make the thing as comfortable as possible. In my realm, we do not kill. There is here no great and terrible day, nor will there ever be. Stay in my realm, or make my realm your realm, but spare Belial. Spare everyone. And then you will not have to cry, and the tears will, as you promised, be wiped away.
Emmanuel said, "You are Christ." Laughing, Zena said, "No, I am not."
"You quote him. Even the devil can cite scripture."
Around them, groups of people appeared, in light summery clothing, men in their shirt sleeves, women in frocks, and he saw all the children.
"The fairy queen," he said, "you beguile me. You lead me from the path with sparks of light, dancing, singing, and the sound of bells, always the sound of bells."
"The bells are blown by the wind," Zena said, "and the wind speaks the truth, always. The desert wind. You know that. I have watched you listen to the wind. The bells are the music of the wind. Listen to them."
He heard, then, the fairy bells. They echoed distantly. Many bells, small ones, not church bells, but the bells of magic. It was the most beautiful sound he had ever heard.
"I cannot myself produce that sound," he said to Zena.
"How is it done?"
"By wakefulness," Zena said.
"The bell sounds wake you up. They rouse you from sleep. You roused Herb Asher from his sleep by a crude interjection. I awakened by means of beauty."
Gentle spring wind blew about them, the vapors of her realm.
13. To himself, Emmanuel said, "I am being poisoned. The vapors of her realm poison me and vitiate my will."
"You are wrong," Zena said.
"I feel less strong."
"You feel less indignation.
Let's go and get Herb Asher. I want him with us. I will narrow down the area of our game. I will arrange it especially for him."
"In what way?"
"We will contest for him," Zena said. "Come."
She beckoned to the boy to follow her. In the cocktail lounge, Herb Asher sat with a glass of scotch and water in front of him. He had been waiting an hour, but the evening entertainment had not begun. The cocktail lounge was filled with people. Constant noise assailed his ears, but for him this was worth it, despite the rather large cover charge. Ribis, across from him, said,
"I just don't understand what you see in her."
"She's going to go a long way," Herb said, "if she gets any kind of a break at all." He wondered if record company scouts came here to the Golden Hind. "I hope so," he said to himself.
"I'd like to leave. I don't feel well. Could we go?"
"I'd prefer not to." Ribis sipped at her tall mixed drink fitfully.
"So much noise," she said,
her voice virtually inaudible. He looked at his watch. "It's almost 9. Her first set is at 9.
"Who is she?" Ribis said.
"She's a new young singer," Herb Asher said. "She's adapted the lute books of John Dowland for..."
"Who's John Dowland? I never heard of him."
"Late 16th century England. Linda Fox has modernized his lute songs. He was the first composer to write for solo voice. Before that, 4 or more people sang, the old madrigal form. I can't explain it. You have to hear her."
"If she's so good, why isn't she on TV?" Ribis said.
Herb said, "She will be." Lights on the stage began to glow. 3 musicians leaped up onto it and began fussing with the audio system. Each had in his possession a vibro-lute. A hand touched Herb Asher on the shoulder.
"Hi."
Glancing up, he saw a young woman whom he did not know. But he thought, "She seems to know me."
"I'm sorry," he began. "May we sit down?"
The woman, pretty, wearing a floral print top and jeans, a male pouch purse over her shoulder, drew a chair back and seated herself beside Herb Asher.
"Sit down, Manny," she said to a small boy who stood awkwardly near the table.
"What a beautiful child," Herb Asher thought. "How did he get in here? There aren't supposed to be any miners in here."
"Are these friends of yours?" Ribbis said.
The pretty, dark-haired young woman said, "Herb hasn't seen me since college. How are you, Herb? Don't you recognize me?" She held out her hand to him, and reflexively he took it. And then as he shook her hand, he remembered her. They had been in school together, in a poli-sci course.
"Zena," he said, delighted. "Zena Palace."
"This is my little brother," Zena said, motioning the boy to sit down.
"Manny. Manny Palace."
To Ribbis, she said, "Herb hasn't changed a bit. I knew it was him when I saw him. You're here to see Linda Fox? I've never heard her. They say she's real good."
"Very good," Herb said, pleased at her support.
"Hello, Mr. Asher," the boy said.
"Glad to meet you, Manny." He shook hands with the boy. "This is my wife, Ribbis."
"So you two are married," Zena said. "Mind if I smoke?"
She lit a cigarette.
"I keep trying to quit, but when I quit, I start eating a lot and get as fat as a pig."
"Is your purse genuine leather?" Ribbis said, interested.
"Yes."
Zena passed it over to her.
"I've never seen a leather purse before," Ribbis said.
"There she is," Herb Asher said.
Linda Fox had appeared on the stage. The audience clapped.
"She looks like a pizza waitress," Ribbis said.
Zena, taking her purse back, said,
"If she's going to make it big, she's going to have to lose some weight. I mean, she looks all right, but..."
"What is this thing you have about weight?" Herb Asher said, irritated. The boy, Manny, spoke up.
"Herbert. Herbert."
"Yes?"
He bent to hear.
"Remember,"
the boy said. Puzzled, he started to say, "Remember what?" But then Linda Fox took hold of the microphone, half shut her eyes, and began to sing. She had a round face and almost a double chin, but her skin was fair, and, most important to him of all, she had long eyelashes that flickered as she sang. They fascinated him, and he sat spellbound. Linda wore an extremely low-cut gown, and even from where he sat he could see the outline of her nipples. She had on no bra.
"Shall I sue? Shall I seek for grace? Shall I pray? Shall I prove? Shall I strive to a heavenly joy with an earthly love?"
Audibly, Ribbis said, "I hate that song. I have heard her before." Several people hissed at her to be quiet.
"Not by her, though," Ribbis said. "She isn't even original. That song..."
She piped down, but she was not happy. When the song ended and the audience had begun to clap, Herb Asher said to his wife, "You never heard Shall I Sue before. Nobody else sings it but Linda Fox."
"You just like to gape at her nipples," Ribbis said.
To Herb Asher, the little boy said,
"Would you take me to the men's room, Mr. Asher?"
"Now?" he said, dismayed.
"Can't you wait until she's through singing?"
The boy said, "Now, Mr. Asher."
With reluctance, he led Manny through the maze of tables to the doors at the rear of the lounge. But before they had entered the men's room, Manny stopped him.
"You can see her better from here," Manny said.
It was true. He was now much closer to the stage. He and the boy stood together in silence as Linda Fox sang, "Weep you no more, sad fountains." When the song ended, Manny said,
"You don't remember, do you? She has enchanted you. Wake up, Herbert Asher. You know me well, and I know you. Linda Fox does not sing her songs at an obscure cocktail lounge in Hollywood. She is famous throughout the galaxy. She is the most important entertainer of this decade. The chief prelate and the procurator Maximus invite her to..."
"She's going to sing again," Herb Asher interrupted. He barely heard the boy's words, and they made no sense to him. "A babbling boy," he thought, "making it hard for me to hear Linda Fox. Just what I need." After the song had ended, Manny said,
"Herbert, Herbert, do you want to meet her?"
Is that what you want?
What? He murmured, his eyes, his attention, fixed on Linda Fox. God, he thought, what a figure she has. She's practically falling out of her dress. He thought, I wish my wife was built like that.
She will come this way, Manny said, when she finishes. Stand here, Herb Asher, and she will pass directly by you.
You're joking, he said.
No, Manny said. You will have what you want most in the world, that which you dreamed of as you lay on your bunk in your dome.
What dome? He said.
Manny said, how you have fallen from heaven, bright morning star.
Feld, you mean one of those colony planet domes? Herb Asher said.
I can't make you listen, can I? Manny said. If I could say to you...
She is coming this way, Herb Asher said. How did you know? He moved a few steps toward her. Linda Fox walked rapidly, with small steps, a gentle expression on her face.
Thank you, she was saying to people who spoke to her.
For a moment she stopped to give her autograph to a black youth nattily dressed. Tapping Herb Asher on the shoulder, a waitress said, You're going to have to take that boy out of here, sir. We can't have minors in here. Sorry, Herb Asher said.
Right now, the waitress said.
Okay, he said. He took Manny by the shoulder and, with unhappy reluctance, led him back toward their table. And as he turned away, he saw out of the corner of his eye the fox pass by the spot at which he and the boy had stood. Manny had been right. A few more seconds, and he would have been able to speak a few words to her. And perhaps she would have answered.
Manny said, It is her desire to trick you, Herb Asher. She offered it to you and took it away again. If you want to meet Linda Fox, I will see that you do. I promise you. Remember this, because it will come to pass. I will not see you cheated.
End of Side 4. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.